Hello, everyone. I am Dominique Mariso.
Hi, I'm Felicia Boswell.
Hey, I'm Candace Marie Woods.
What's going on? It's your boy Jawan M. Jackson, and you're listening to the Call and Response Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response Podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And I know every week I'm so hyped, I'm so thrilled, I'm so excited. It's like the catchphrase because it's so true. We have so many talented artists and theater makers in this community. I'm so grateful every week to talk to everyone. And this week, y'all, is no exception. You can hear me smiling. You can always hear me smile when I'm talking and I'm excited because I just adore this person so much. I don't know if he remembers how we officially met, but it was him just casually minding his own business, trying to be a human, drinking at Glass House. And I just scooted up and I said, hey, I think you're so talented and I love you. And Jawan M. Jackson took it in stride, which I'm always grateful for that moment. But, you know, we've got to connect through Playbill and other interviews like that because, y'all, this man is doing it. I mean, y'all know him, of course, as Melvin Franklin in Ain't Too Proud. But I mean, he was also in Motown. He has recorded his own music. We're going to dive into all of it today. Please welcome Jawan M. Jackson.
What is going on, girl?
Hey. Oh, my gosh. I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk to you. Like I was saying and gushing about you, I just think you're so wonderful. And you just are so joyful and like radiate this unapologetic, like, inner light, and I'm just so here for it, and I always love to get the chance to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much. Listen, I just, you know, one thing that I've learned is choosing joy is my option daily, and I'm going to choose it as long as I live. You know, as long as I live, there's nothing that is going to be able to take it down, you know. And I think also when you spread light and share light, you know, it returns. So, you know, you can make somebody's day and you don't even know you made it. So that is the goal every day, is to live my best.
Amen. And you succeed in that mission for sure.
I appreciate you. And you know what's so funny? I do remember that night because I was at the bar. And I was like, hey, what's going on, girl?
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, and that's just what it is. Like, I realized that in this industry, like, because I'm guilty of doing that randomly to people too. And like, you don't know, you never know how it's going to go off. And so I just remember I was doing an interview a couple weeks ago. And I was just telling, like, people always remember how you make them feel. And so I want to make sure that regardless of who you are, and I want to treat you, if you're the highest person or the boss or the lowest person working in the, as a janitor, I want to make you feel the same because all people are, you know, should be treated that way. And so that's the motto I go by. And I'm just glad it, you know, it turned out well.
Me too. And I appreciate your motto because yes, like, I feel like in those, you know, I never want to bother people and like sit with them all night and be like, now we're best friends, but just to be like, hey, I appreciate your work. But you do, like, you have to vibe people out. And again, I think it was your joy that I was like, no, he's going to be all right with me just saying hello.
Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely.
So anyway, so yes, I'm so excited to chat. And I'm actually really, I know you have had such an interesting and fascinating journey to the Broadway stage. Because you worked at Broadway.com. I mean, and I learned you were, I didn't know you were a radio personality, but with your voice, it makes so much sense to me. And I'm so thrilled to learn that. But I'd love to start out with learning how you got like initially involved with performing arts.
Oh, performing arts. I feel like before I can really talk, honestly, like, you know, entertaining music has been like a love and a passion. And I have to give credit to my grandmother, you know, way back when, her introducing me to, you know, just award shows and like rhythm and blues and just like everything. Like, we had those, you know, those record players, and she used to have like her blues cuts playing all over the house, and I just would sing to them. And I just remember we also, I don't know your age and I don't want to give it away, like, we used to have those VHSs. That when, you know, when you were putting the TV and you record what's going on the TV so you can watch it back, because we ain't have DVR back in the day, you know what I'm saying? Right. We wouldn't afford it, the luxury of being able to record it on the TV. We had to record it on a cassette tape. And so my grandmother used to have these boxes and boxes of just tapes and tapes for days of things that she recorded. And I landed on the 85 Soul Train Awards, I believe it was. And that was the Whitney Houston's debut of singing You Give Good Love. And Dionne Warwick was hosting with Luther Vandross. And
wow.
Whitney Houston, I think, co-hosted that evening. And so, you know, because of that, it was Starfield and it was all the singing. And so I memorized that tape frontwards to backwards. When I tell you the award show to the commercials in between, like I memorized it from word for word. But my favorite part of that whole cassette tape was at the very end, they had this gospel tribute and they sang Mary, Don't You Weep. And one of my favorite gospel singers, my two all-time favorite gospel singers, Shirley Caesar and Vanessa Bell Armstrong, they were on there and I used to watch it over and over and over and over and over again. And that's how I ended up started to sing. And so that was like my introduction to, like, you know, music. And then because my grandfather was a pastor and my family was heavily involved in the church, like I grew up in the church singing. And so always was around music and it didn't kind of like blossom until me like trying to like perform until I would say I was in like the fifth grade. And I was at a summer camp talent show. And Felicia, you want to know what song I sang? I'm a little bit embarrassed. I'm a little bit embarrassed, but it was the hottest song that year. It was Somebody Sleeping in My Bed by Drew Hill was the song I was singing.
I'm so happy. I love that for fifth grade you. That's great.
Somebody Sleeping in My Bed. And I just remember singing that song in front of my day camp, and they were like, this might not be an appropriate song for you to be singing. But I was just like, I love this song, and I got to get it out. I was like, I got this feeling, and I just can't turn it loose. I was like, yo, I gotta get this song out. And then we graduated from that song to Can We Talk by Tevin Campbell, because my voice before, you know, I was singing real, real high so I could belt those notes and I can sing it in his key. I can sing it in everybody's key I needed to do.
Right.
You know, and that was the like beginning. I was like, oh, I'm about to be lit. Like, I'm about to be a singer. I'm about to be. And then seventh grade came and my voice dropped and then I started talking like this. And I just didn't know what to do with it. I was like, I'm never going to do anything. I'm never going to be anything.
Wow.
You know, and my voice dropped at 12 years old. And I just knew that was the end of everything I wanted to ever do. And it was my choir director who really just, you know, shaped me. And he did. He was just like, he saw like the struggle. Because I haven't told anybody this. Like, I was up until that point, I was like, I was going to quit. But then I was like, I don't know what to do with my voice. And, you know, he saw me like struggling to sing these high songs and bombing. But, you know, because I had encouraging parents and a good encouraging system, I knew I was horrible. I knew it was bad, you know, but they encouraged me. And they was like, keep going. You got it. You got it. You got it. And because of that encouragement, I think that's what made me continue on. Because had I not had that, I probably would have given up and then tried something different and not been in entertainment. But that's the power, and I think that is a powerful message as well, is the power of, you know, your parents and people who love you encouraging you when you feel like you don't, because they see the potential, they see something in you that you don't see in yourself. And my mother and my people around me, they saw it and they felt it, and they always pushed me. There was nothing ever in my household, and I'm glad I can be able to say this, that I was not able to do creatively, artistically, or just whatever I wanted to do growing up. My parents, even if they side-eyed it, they'd be like, okay, you know. And even the stuff I didn't want to do, they made me do, you know. I had a full ride band scholarship when I was in high school, and I just hated it. I played the tuba and the clarinet growing up, and I did not want to do it. I wanted to play football, and I wanted to do hood rat things with my hood rat friends. That's what I wanted to do. And my mother and dad was like, nope, you're going to be in this marching band. And if you play football, you got to do marching band. So I was doing double duty. I was playing football because that's what I wanted to do. And I was off in the marching band because that's what my parents wanted me to do. Because it's like, you're going to have some type of structure and some type of creative outlet to, you know, you're just not going to just do this one thing and be like a one trick pony. Like, I don't want, yes, you play sports. Yes, you're black, but you need something substantial to, you know, move you forward just in case sports doesn't work. So kudos to my parents, but I hated them at the time for it. I was like, ew, I push back. And my band teacher would come to my house because I would quit, and they would come to my house. Jawan quit, and we really want him in. She's like, why would you quit? I'm like, because I don't like it. And I'm like, why is the band teacher coming telling on me? I don't want to do this.
Snitching.
Snitching. But I'm glad he did. Mr. Coleman, yeah. Good for you, because you're the reason that I am in, you know, this musical journey. So thank you, wherever you are in the world.
Wow. Shout out to, yes, your parents and the band teacher, because that, I mean, that is so beautiful. I think a lot of folks talk about not having support of their parents when they want to pursue the arts, and like them encouraging it, even though it was frustrating at the time, is so beautiful. Yeah. And I mean, you grew up in Detroit, right? So music was around.
Yeah, music was always through and through. Everywhere you turn, like my community I grew up in, that my grandmother lives in, Royal Oak Township. And it's a 16 by 16 block neighborhood. And literally, Felicia, I could walk every block and I had a relative on each block. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if you did something by the end of the neighborhood, by the time you got home, it was already to your mom and daddy, because everybody, they'd already called and said, Jawan down here acting up. So by the time I get in the house, they already well informed with them, you know, what happened. And so that type of community, that type of rearing we had. And so because of that, we had family reunions, we had talent shows for the community. So like, it was just a lot. My cousin used to be in this dance group, her and her female, like high school friends. And they, you know, they used to dance battle. So we had a whole bunch of like dancing girls. And then we had like the singers and the rappers. And we had, so I grew up around all of this because I was also like the youngest of my cousins.
Yeah.
So just being around that, you know, I got a lot of experience, a little bit. That's probably why I was a little bit more advanced than my counterparts too, which is a good and a bad thing. Right.
But so then I'm so curious, like, when did this switch happen of you being like, no, I'm not, like, you know, your voice had changed, you're not wanting to do band. When did you switch and you're like, no, I'm going to embrace this wholeheartedly?
Fully, I want to say about the 10th grade. No, sorry, 11th grade.
Okay.
Up until that point, like, I was still singing, but I was like, oh, it's just something to do. But it was my 11th grade year, that's when I got baptized. You know, I had, I never, like, my parents just wanted, it was like, we're going to let you, you know, find Christ for yourself. And whenever you do, then you can do it on your own. But we're just not going to baptize you because you don't know any better. So they wanted me to, you know, find Christ for myself. And so when I was 17, my grandfather and I, at that time, you know, it was like, and I got to be honest, and he knows the story, so it's not going to be a surprise, or it's not going to be like, oh, Jawan told some family secrets. So at the time, like, I didn't like my dad's parents. I did not like going over their house. I was like my mother's mother's baby. You know, my granny is with my heart. She is, I love her to death. But when I would be asked to go over my dad's parents' house, I'm like, no, I don't want to go over there. I don't like them. And we were always, you know, they would take us to church every day. And so I'd be sitting in church with an attitude like, I don't want to be here with them, whatever. Mm-hmm. Then it was a switch when I turned 17, and I wanted to join the male choir. And my grandfather was in the choir. And because of that, we would have rehearsals on Saturdays. So my grandfather would pick me up and then we would drive to rehearsals on, you know, every Saturday. And so that's when we began to spend more time with each other. And I think that's when our relationship also shifted. Yeah. And I got to learn who my grandfather was as a person and got to see him outside of him just being, you know, a person that was just a disciplinary, somebody who gave me money, somebody who was always like fussing at me, yelling at me, and he's a mean person I never saw around. But he actually became, you know, he softened. And when I joined church, you know, he became like my best friend. Like I say to this day, like when you see my grandfather and I, like, you'll be like, y'all are too good. Like, what is going on? Like, y'all, what is this relationship? Because I adore my grandfather. Like, he is the best person in the world to me now. He is like everything. There is nothing that you can say or do that can take him away. But back then, 17-year-old, 16-year-old Jawan, I ain't want to have parts with him. And so that's when the shift happened. So I sang my first church solo in the choir there. And, you know, just the reaction and the response from the audience and the way that I accepted my voice and because it was different. And I was like, oh my God, are they going to love me? And they absolutely loved me. And, yes. you know, I was like, okay, I want to do this professionally now. This is what I want to do. So that's when the actual spark came. But I feel like it's been a part of me. I wanted to be like, I knew I wanted to do it some part when I was 12 years old, because I used to have sticky notes all over my house. But you know how you kind of like go through life and your dream is deferred and you lose track of that vision. You know, it came back to me that day. And that's when I was like, this is what I want.
Wow. I love that story, because I think it is like the experience of, like you said, your relationship shifting with your granddad, like seeing your grandparents as human, not just as humans, but I'm saying, like, you know, when you're a kid, like you said, they're either like the disciplinarians or they're just giving you money or whatever. But then when you're like, no, we can have like a human bond as like adults, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's different.
It's absolutely different. And I appreciate it. And what's even crazier about that is that, you know, my father and my grandfather, they didn't have the best relationship growing up, you know? And so our relationship at one point, I feel like my grandfather and I's, it's like, it was better than my father's. And I think that because my father saw the relationship that I had with his father, it got him to get closer to him. So I bridged the gap between that. So I was just like, you know, I didn't know the work that was being happened and the things that were being broken, but I'm glad that it happened because, you know, it made us better. You know, we don't always get it right in family and everything, but I think that, you know, it was just, it's good to see us all come together and to break those generational curses that was holding us. So yeah, it was a blessing in disguise out of it.
I got goosebumps. I love that. That's so heartwarming.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. And it ignited the official spark of your musical journey, which is also so cool.
Uh-huh. So then, you know, graduation comes. It's like, okay, Juwan, do you want to be a singer or you want to make some money? You want to go to college and make some money? Like, what do you want to do? What are you doing? You got, you know, I was full of so many ways. And that, you know, that also, you know, just influenced what school I wanted to go to, because my dream school to go to was Clark Atlanta University. Ever since I was a little boy, I just looked at Clark and I was like, that's where I want to go. I want to go to Clark. And, you know, I got in every year, like, every college that I applied to, which is crazy, I got accepted to. I applied for every single one of them. I did not get no, you can't come in letters. I didn't get no rejections. I got every exception. But the only one that mattered to me was Clark University. And so I would have been devastated. I was devastated. I was the most nervous sending that application in, because I made sure I had filled that up. I did all my community service. I was doing my summer internships. I was doing, you know, making sure I was in every club so I could be, you know, have it like my resume, just like I am a character student, you know, and just decorated with all the things. I got marching band on here that I stuck to because my mama told me to, and I ain't want it, you know, and it ended up helping me in the end because I had it on my, it was just so great. And then I got that, you know, acceptance letter, and I was like, I don't care about nothing else. Mind you, I have full rides to like 5 different colleges, but did not have a full ride to Clark. They gave me $2 to go to Clark. $2. Not literally, but just doing? Like, you know, just like, I was like, but this is my school I want to go to. So I gave all of that up to go to Clark. And I went for, you know, not even a full semester there before they were like, you owe $20,000 to continue for your next semester. I'm like, well, that's the end of this journey. I'll be going somewhere else.
Dang.
Yeah. So that's what that is. And, you know, I'm glad I ended up going to the school I went to, Eastern Michigan University, because, you know, it introduced me to my college choir, Eastern Michigan Gospel Choir, that I sang with my entire duration there and got to travel the world and sing behind these great artists and go on tour and be on TV shows. And then, you know, it introduced me to this theater group organization called Reflections of Christ, which is a theater troupe that got to let me lead plays and do all kinds of other things. And then it was the actual theater program at my university that allowed me to do plays. And my college professor, Decky Alexander, really pushed me. She was the one that really pushed me towards like, Juwan, you actually should be doing, you know, theater. You're so great. You're great for stage. Your voice is amazing. You need to be doing theater. And I never considered merging the two until then. Because I always thought they were separate things. I always thought I could have to do plays and I had to do music. I never considered the two merging. Oh, and it was her that really just, you know, that she binded them things together. And, you know, I credit her for me being, you know, doing the things that I was doing. Because I got to teach theater. I got to, you know, I got my first movie, you know, while working as a teacher. Like, I got everything, you know, that kind of led me to Motown, which led me to New York. So.
Well, and so did you do straight plays while you were in college? Like, not, you're saying you did not musicals in college.
I didn't do not one musical in college. I did all plays in college. All plays.
Did you like the plays versus musicals?
Well, I didn't know any better, but at the time I thought that was the only thing to do. And I was just like, I was here for it. I was playing. My first play was, Bud Not Buddy by the book by Christopher Paul Curtis. And that was that kind of got like a big local pickup because it was the first time that we had did any adaptation of the book. So he came and ended up coming to see the show and his big old write up because, you know, he's a Nobel Peace Prize winner and all this Pulitzer Prize. You know, so he came and it was a big old thing. And so, you know, I was like, oh, I caught the bug on that. And then I did, another straight play and I was playing a preacher. And then I did another play and I was playing a crazy ex-boyfriend. So I was like getting off of like doing plays. And it wasn't until I started doing this thing called The Wiz of Motown, which now is a musical, you know, that was my very first like introduction into it.
Wow.
And which I didn't even get a chance to do that because I had ended up booking Motown the musical.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. I was in rehearsals for The Wiz of Motown when I was auditioning for Motown the musical. And, you know, I went and they flew me out to New York and that was supposed to, the Wiz of Motown was supposed to go up in January and that's when I moved out here. So, you know, it all kind of worked out. Yeah. So Motown the musical was my very first, like, professional musical. And I did it in high school. Like, I was ensemble people, but I didn't have any parts. I just was part of the choir, you know, and I had like a little small speaking parts, but musical stuff, that's where I did.
So how did you find out about like the audition for Motown? Because that feels like, I mean, you were just like, let's go, I'm leaping into it. Like, how was that transition for you?
What's crazy is that every day before I went to work, I would always Google and web search auditions. You know, theater auditions, movie auditions, television commercials. And I was doing that. And on another podcast, I'll tell you how I was trying to be a model. And then I ended up getting scammed by this lady. You know, that's another podcast for another time. I got like 30 different lives in the show of my time.
I love that. That is hilarious, but like also very stressful. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know, because I always say, I'm like, I have this story that I've been telling, but I when you start telling and telling your story, you're like, oh my God, then this happened. So
there's
so many things going on that I can tell my story in so many different ways and they all come out this way. You're like, how?
But
so I digress. So I actually found the Motown audition in the classifieds of the newspaper. And I don't ever read the newspaper. Okay. Don't ever read the newspaper. But my uncle by chance had it and I was just going through it and I was reading and it had like a small little ad and it says, want to sing, want to be a part of a play, come audition for Motown the musical, email this, you know, whatever. And so I emailed them immediately, not thinking anything of it. And I got this like automatic response and the audition was held at Marvin Winans Academy. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with who Marvin Winans is, but he's part of the legendary group, the Winans brothers, which is BB and CC Winans, you know, older brothers. Mm-hmm. And they're a huge gospel group in Detroit, out of Detroit. And so he has a school. And so that's where the school was held. I mean, the auditions were held. And, you know, I come to later find out that Charles Randall Wright, our director, knew Marvin Winans. And because Charles directed their first TV show, the Winans TV show, which is how they end up being able to host the audition.
Okay.
And so I went to audition and sang my little song. And I sang Papa Was a Rolling Stone.
Oh, man, classic.
And, you know, did my little 16 bars and left, not thinking anything of it. They emailed me and was like, hey, can you actually sing a low C, sing this part, and do these sides? And so I did that. I was in rehearsal with the theater troupe that I was a part of, and they stopped rehearsal. We prayed, had a big old prayer circle, and then they helped me put this audition on tape. And wow. I sent it in, and I was like, we're just gonna let it, you know, do what it's gonna do. And mm-hmm. they sent me another email back about a week later and said, hey, we want you to audition for, you know, at the Motown Museum. Now, at that time, I was doing a lot of stuff, Felicia. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I kept myself busy. I know one thing I know how to do is keep myself busy and occupied. So I was teaching during the day. I was, wow. you know, now the youth leader at my church. I was doing choir rehearsal. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Clark sisters. So mm-hmm. Jackie Clark, she was starting her own like theater company. So she was starting, she wanted to do stage plays, a choir, a theater thing. So she was, you know, starting all of this. So I was also a part of that and like in rehearsals and doing workshop stuff for her in that. And then they were like, okay, come and audition. And then I was also trying at the time to become, you know, be in a fraternity. So I was doing all of these things. Doing all of these things. And I went and auditioned and I told them, actually, what's so crazy is I was supposed to be, you know, having like this meeting for the fraternity I was supposed to be a part of. I was like, yo, I may be late, but I'm doing this because I have this thing that I have to do. And so I didn't tell them what it was at the time. And I just went and did it. So I auditioned for the first time in the Motown Museum, not understanding the magnitude of where I was or what I was doing. I just went in, sang my song. And, you know, that's when Brandon Victor Dixon was there. Valencia LeCay was there. And they had just flew in and they were dead tired. Brandon and Valencia were like hugged up against one another, knocked out. But I think Valencia was under her coat, just like snuggled up because she was cold. And it was this whole thing. They just seemed like so disinterested. And I went in and sang the song and I opened my mouth and then they both sat up and it was like, That's it right there. Wow. And they called me back, had me do the sides. And, you know, Brandon Victor Dixon was one of my like biggest champions. He was one of my biggest champions on like, you know, getting me here and like being a part of this. Like, wow. He told me later, once I ended up getting a job, you know, and we were in the room, he was like, I fought for you, you know, and I'm like, well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? So I don't really forget things like that, you know, that people have done. And, you know, I realized the power of people's recommendations, you know, and that's why, you know, just moving forward as a personal thing, like I try to help people that are great too. You know, I want to give back and I want to make sure that I speak power to people who I deem are great and that are have potential. So that's how I end up getting that whole thing.
That is a wild roller coaster ride from beginning to end. And like how cosmic that you happened to read that newspaper. You said you don't read newspapers, but that one you did. And look at where you are now.
It's so crazy. It's just so crazy.
And that's how it feels like that's how it works sometimes where you're just like, okay, you know, I'm going to just take each step is going to matter, but like you just have to keep walking that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's so crazy about it is that whole experience, it was no bumps in the roads, not one bump in the road. Remember I was telling you, I was, you know, I was interested in the organization. Like I would like nothing skipped a beat. Everything that I had to do, aside from audition, like it still like flew, like everything ran smoothly. I went and made that, you know, that meeting that night, went in there. And I remember we had to write a letter and they were like, you know, and I put that, I was like, I'm trying to be, I'm a working actor. I'm a working professional, like toward a professional actor, you know, actor or whatever. And, you know, in organizations, they grill you and they try to like haze and like, oh, so you're a working actor. So what you doing? What you got? I said, you know, and I said, it's so confident. I said, I just auditioned for something and I'm about to book it and I'll be working. I'm not doing this for fake. This is for real. This is what I do. This is my life.
Right.
And so I said it with such confidence. They kind of was like, okay. And then, And then when I booked it, you know, they're like, I was like, you know, I almost didn't come here.
Really?
I almost didn't come to New York, Felicia, because, you know, because I was like trying to be in this fraternity, I was like, I'm not leaving because this is what I want to do. And they were like, it was them that said, this organization has been here 100+ years. Go take the opportunity. We'll be here when you get back. It ain't going nowhere. And so it was because of that that made me come to New York, because I was not coming.
Wow. Wow. That is, I mean, I'm glad, but I'm glad they encouraged you. Like you were saying, like your parents encouraged you when you were younger and they were like, no, go do this.
Yeah.
Dang. So, I mean, I'm glad you came. I'm glad you made the trip to New York.
Me too.
What was your Broadway debut like? Just thinking back, I mean, I just keep thinking back to seventh grade Jawan now of being like, oh, my voice dropped. I don't know what to do. Like now your voice is what propelled you to make your Broadway debut.
You know, it was still scary because now I come to New York not knowing what New York is and the machine is of New York. So I'm a little fish in a big city. Back home in Detroit, I was a big fish in a little city, because now I had gotten to the point where I was working consistently. I was doing stuff. People knew my name. I was on the radio every Sunday. On the weekends, I was traveling this place. I was doing, you know, hosting this event. I was doing this church thing, and I was doing stuff. And so people knew how I was. So now I come to New York and I don't know anybody. And people in the room, I felt was more talented and gifted than I was, you know? And so everybody who opened their mouth of the 42 cast members that I had, they could hold their own easily.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? It was just, it was, so for me, it was intimidation, because I also came in not being able to read music. I was I hear, so I'm like, I can't read music. I don't know what this means. Like, you're going to have to give me my part. And this is how they taught me at church. So like singing, you know, they just taught you the parts. They didn't give you sheet music. They didn't do anything, you know, in the Black experience at church. And so I'm just like, okay, nah, Jawan, you have to learn how to educate yourself a little bit better than what you're doing now. And so, you know, it was scary for me. It was really, really scary. But my castmates, they all helped me out. And because I wasn't a dancer, I had 2 left feet. I was intimidated by that because everybody is spinning and twirling and moving and doing, you know, pliés and splits and all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, I'm 60 pounds heavier than I was, like, and have never danced in my life. I'm like, I can club dance. I can like get behind, you know, somebody and like two step, but what y'all doing, I don't know what this is. So I kept messing up and I started beating myself up for it. So, you know, because of that, you know, insecurity sets in, self-doubt started to set in. And so I had to like fight against all of that stuff when I started, you know. So the first like month of rehearsals was me just trying to fight off all that, my inner monologue telling me to quit and telling me to go back home and that I didn't deserve to be here. And, you know, again, the love of my castmates and the love of the creative team that was a Motown, like they helped me and they pushed me. And, you know, we had the Temptations in that group. And so the 5 of them rallied around me and worked really, really hard to bring me up to par. You know, they worked really, really hard, and I would be rehearsing. We would have a 10-minute break. I would not break. I'd go in the bathroom or I'd be in the corner trying to learn my dance moves, because I didn't want to be the weakest link, you know, of the group or stopping the thing, because, you know, it's embarrassing for, you know, the choreographer to stop it. Like, Jawan, you're on the wrong foot. Jawan, you're supposed to be on 6 instead of 4. Jawan, I was tired of hearing that. I was like, okay, I got to get it together. So I would go home. I would not sleep, you know, to make sure I was right. And, you know, thankfully I got it together, you know, because I wanted to prove to them that I belonged here just as much as that, you know, they chose me to be here. I didn't want anybody to have any second guesses or thoughts of why they chose me. So
you're making me tear up. Like, I feel like, you know, it was so important for you to have that community, because that could feel so isolating, like you were saying, like of just taking your break or doing it when you're in your apartment, and like making sure that you kept your self-worth and that the people there supported you. Just sounds like it was so necessary for that experience.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was. I definitely agree.
Because that's, I mean, it's just scary. Like, just to take on Broadway like that, like, yeah, I could see how that would be super intimidating, like you said.
Yeah, because also you think, you know, you don't know what Broadway is when you're not here. So for me, Broadway was this big old thing that was untouchable, and, you know, it's lights and the celebrity field. And so once I made it to Broadway, I was going to be all over everybody's television. I was going to be, like, catapulted into, you know, instant success and stardom, and I was going to win a Tony Award, and I was going to do all of these things. And I get here, it was like, nope, none of that exists here, especially for the ensemble. No, you don't do that. So, I had to learn.
You said, yeah, you don't know until you know when you're in it.
Mm-hmm. You don't know until you know, and because of that, you know, my expectations changed and shifted, and then that's when I began to learn the business, and I begin to learn, okay, I see that they're a lead. I see that they're getting this and they're doing this. What are they doing? Let me learn that. And so I'm a sponge. So I started to soak up, like, okay, how do I need to carry myself? Okay, I'm a leading man. I want to be a leading man. What do I need to do? How do I need to do it? And so I started to emulate and carry myself and start to really, really, shape and sculpt, you know, my journey. And Dulé Hill, who I love and adore, you know, it was him who really just put me up on game. And really, sat down and had we talked for like, probably like 2 hours one night. He was doing After Midnight at the time, and my dresser had left to go dress him. And so the only way I gave my dresser his my blessing to go, I said, Dulé Hill is one of my favorite actors. I love Psych. That is my favorite TV show. You got to introduce us. You got to set it up. That's the only way that I'll give you my blessing. And he was like, okay, Joanne, I'll do that for you. And I came to the show, and sure enough, he brought me backstage. Dulé and I hit it off instantaneously. And then he was at Glass House. Here's this Glass House thing. So
classic, right?
Yeah. So we're at Glass House. We're texting. He was like, yo, I'm at Glass House. Come after your show. Let's talk. Or let's, you know, catch a drink if you want. And, you know, from there, at that table, his whole team was there that night. His financial advisor, his lawyers, his agent, and someone else that I feel bad that I can't remember now, and him. And so we sat there and we just got to talking and talking and talking. And Dulé just laid so much information on me as far as my journey. Because I was asking, I was like, okay, what do I do now? How do I do this? Where do I go? He was like, listen, you want to be a leading man. You have to be very specific in the way that you sculpt your career. He's like, because everything that's going to come to you, you shouldn't take. If it doesn't align with your purpose and what you want for where you see yourself, don't take it. And so, and at some point, you know, you got to figure out, am I in this for money, or if I'm in this for my career longevity? And so you got to figure out what that is. And so earlier on, I figured that out. And then, you know, just having that great conversation that night, I inherited his whole team. Like, they all called me and it was like, I want to help you. We want to do this. And they all set me up. You know, his lawyers that are still my lawyers now ended up, they got me my managers that I have today, you know, which got me my agents that I have. Like, it's so, so like, the Dulé, whether he knows it or not, he's the gift that keeps on giving to me. And I said it out loud to him personally, like, you know, personally, but publicly, I just need to, like, let it be known that he is the reason why I am, you know, sculpting my career the way I am because of his advice to me. So
shout out to Dulé Hill.
That
is incredible though.
Yeah.
Like, just to for him to impart that wisdom, you know.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to do that. He didn't have to do that. He didn't have to take this time out and be like, yo, you know, all right, you know, get these drinks and, you know, see you later. You know, but he really took the time, and he's just always been like that. He's just, his heart is warm, his heart is kind. And again, I emulate people like that because that's how I want to be. I want to treat people the way I've been treated by my favorite people, you know? And so I just think it's a lesson to be told.
Absolutely. And it's that, like, community aspect and that, you know, the friendships that develop in the theater that I think are so special.
Because we run into each other all the time, you know?
Right, right.
Whether we audition it, you know, sometimes I've been in a room and like, oh, here we go. One of us. It's going to be one of us, you know. There's only one role, you know, that part is only one role. So it's like, all right, well, I love you, friend, but I got to come in here and I got to sing this song the way it needs to be saying so I can get this part. No hard feelings, but I love you. And they saying the same thing. So it's that like friendly competition at the end of the day, like we still love each other. It's still all love and I appreciate it. So
yeah. When I feel like, of course, like it's so that way with Ain't Too Proud. Like y'all have such, I mean, a brotherhood of the Temps, but and then the whole cast, like you just see the love radiating off that stage. Like I mean I love that whole show. We don't have to dive into why I love the show because this podcast is not about me, but you know, I love that moment where everyone comes out in the white jackets at the end. And I just like whether y'all are performing on the Thanksgiving Day parade, wherever it is, you can just feel that same kind of like love and camaraderie.
Yeah, it's definitely real. I think one great aspect of that is that we were all friends before this. You know, so I knew half the cast, more than half the cast before I even joined the cast. And so just being able to work with people that you love and adore and admire and have seen, you know, it's just been so, so great. It's been so great. Just a joy. So like those moments where we're laughing, those be real laughing moments. You know, there's nothing put upon about any moment in our show because we have a real relationship with each other, you know. It's just, and that's one thing I love and adore about that show is that we're a huge family on and off stage.
Yeah. And y'all like, I mean, look, I've been to my fair share of openings. Again, this podcast is not about me, but I have to share with you, like y'all's opening was so fun. And there was a moment where we were all doing the wobble and I saw like Dominique Mariso and I was like, I'm doing wobble next to Dominique. Like y'all just, it's. Y'all are absolutely a family. It felt like a little family reunion.
You know, I think one thing we wanted to, you know, make it feel authentic is like a family reunion. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We are a show that's set in Detroit, you know, about brotherhood, about love, about friendship, about joy, ups and downs, pains and sorrows. And at this moment, we wanted to give you the authentic experience of what it feels like to be with family at a, you know, and feel all the love and the joy and the support. Yes. And not for anything, like back home, when we have parties and clubs and, you know, whatever, like, that's how it is. It's just a good time. It's feel good. We're around people. We dressed up to the nines. We all looking good, smelling good. We did this show that was lit. Like,
yes.
We wanted to have a good time, and I think that's what it's all about.
It is. And it, yeah, every single performance, y'all are like that. But, I mean, it's... Y'all are just a special crew. And you know, thinking of another time where you said you look good and smell good, the Met Gala. Like,
that was fun.
That, y'all were out and about all the time.
Yeah, it was such a blessing that year. 2019 was a great, great year. It was a stressful year. It was a financially real, real, real expensive year. But it was a great year. It was a great year. Like, shout out to Anna Wintour, who, you know, invited us and like really just loved on us that year. And, you know, also Tom Brown for the outfits, because Tom Brown dressed us head to toe. Good. And then our own like glamps. Here's the thing, Felicia, I didn't know until, you know, once you get a certain place in your career, elevation happens, and then there's a different requirement that happens because of that elevation. So like, I didn't know that men need to have glam teams and this, that, and four. So he has hair and makeup coming. I'm like, oh, I need that. Okay. Cool.
Right.
All right. This is what we need to do. So it was like literally in our hotel room, the five of us had our own, like, we have bar, everybody had their barbers, everybody had their makeup artist, their own little team in this like suite downtown. You know, our producers like laid us out in the suite. And really got us together. And it was just a really, really good time. It was loving all day. And that's right before the Tony nominations that came out. So we was on the high of that. And it was a good time. That Met Gala, I have some memories that'll last me a lifetime that I won't keep to myself. So I can get invited back again. Because you're not supposed to tell what happened inside the Met. So you know, it's a good time. It's a real, real good time. Grand old
what happens?
Time.
What happens at the Met Gala stays at the Met Gala.
Stay right in the Met Gala. You won't get me banned.
But I'm glad y'all had fun because it. I mean, it just from the photos, y'all killed it. Like y'all look so good, and it just I mean, that's like you said, it's just like an elevation of like what y'all are doing, mm-hmm. where you, it's like, oh, we reached the level where we need glam squads and we're going to the Met Gala. I mean, that guest list, but
it's crazy. It's crazy, you know? And then like, then you have to add publicists on there. I'm like, I never considered a publicist until I got this. I'm like, okay, cool. How much are you? Okay, girl. All right. Cool. I'm paying college tuition. All right, cool.
No kidding. Yeah.
But all these things are needed. You know, and I think that one thing that I got to do during this pandemic was kind of like get with a business partner of mine, and we developed this show of, you know, literacy in the business, you know, all of these things, you know, that people need to know that they don't know coming into it. You know, if I didn't have the financial advisor and my grandfather and planner and my lawyers and my all things before I came here, I probably would be broke, you know what I'm saying? And so I think it's important to share this information to the newcomers and the people that are, you know, seeking to be in here, and those who are already in the business who don't know any better. All of these things are important so you can prepare your life, you know, because before I got here, I was like, you know, you partying every day. Like, our lifestyle is a party. Our lifestyle is spent at social events. And so by the time you know it, you've been to 5 different, you know, parties or clubs or events, and you've spent $500 on alcohol alone. You know, and then not to include the Uber, you know, tab that you about to bill up because you don't want to take the train home. Or you want to keep up with the Joneses, so you don't want to be like, oh, you're in this Lee show and you're going to take the train dressed in your $1,000 suit that you got for the night. No, you can't do that. So it's all of these things that you got to, you know, that you got to take in consideration. I think that people need to be taught these things, you know, to understand it. Now, I'm frugal as it comes, but like, you know, I think that it is something to be said that people need to know.
Oh, I know. I absolutely agree. And I love the idea of like a literacy program or class or school or something, because it is where even thinking of like financial stuff, but also, you know, young aspiring theater makers or producers who maybe don't know how to like write a press release, or like, you know, there's all of these little things of the sides of the business, or like the headshot and resume situation that some people might not know. Like, there's so many different parts of it.
Yeah. You know, because when I first got here, they're like, you need a black and white headshot. And then I spent all this money for a black and white headshot. And then they were like, why is your headshot in color? I was like, because I was told I needed it in black and white.
Lord.
So he's like, no, you no longer need black and white headshots. So you need that. So it's like little small things like that. So I done wasted $300 for some headshots to be shot in black and white that I can get in color.
Exactly.
So I'm wasting money. So like, these are things, important things, because the business is ever changing, you know? And, you know, it's also why I think it's important for people who come before us to reach back, you know, to the younger generation, so we can reach back to, you know, our folks that's coming up. And I think that is very important. That's what I always do. And I, you know, I work with Rosie's Theater's kids, who has been my, just all-time favorite, or one of my all-time favorite organizations to work with. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I can announce it. It hasn't been made public, but I'll give you the first, you know, the breaking news. I just became one of the board of directors of Rosie's Theater Kids. So like,
congratulations.
Thank you. So it's like, you know, I get to now like, you know, pass it on, because that's what it's about. You know, I had, you know, old heads from my neighborhood, you know, rear me up and teaching me how to do it and teach me the, you know, what, how to carry myself in the street, how to carry myself in the business workplace, how to do these things. And so I want to be able to give that to, you know, my children and, you know, the children before me that's coming after me, so they know how to conduct themselves and handle themselves, because it's a different world nowadays, completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. And thinking back to all of the like support, like you said, you got, I mean, the snitching band teacher, or like your college professor who was telling you about musicals, like having people like you who can give back to the younger generation is just so important. It's like how we keep the world going around, you know?
Yeah, it's just very important. And I just think that if everybody had that mindset, then we wouldn't be in this, like, you know, crabs of a barrel type situation, which I absolutely hate, you know, because I don't have a negative selfish bone in my body. Like, I've always been giving, I've always been like over, you know, over exerting myself to things and people. And so I just hate to see it, because it's not necessary. Everybody can win. everybody's journey is different. You know, comparison kills. Just know, like, just make sure you do you. Keep your eyes on what you're supposed to be doing, and you're going to get everything that you need. Just because someone else has something doesn't mean that you won't get it. What's for them is for them, and what's for you is for you. End of story.
That's a good philosophy. You know, why do you think people, I mean, this is a, I feel like a big philosophical question that we don't have to answer today, but like, what do you think leads to that competitive kind of like, you know, comparison culture of some people?
I think it's two things. I think one, we were conditioned to compete against one another, you know, and if I'm being specific, like what I just said earlier, going back to like going out for a Broadway show and there's only one black role in the show. You know, and so now your friend, you up against you and 12 of your other friends, and only one of you are going to get it. You know what I'm saying? Right. And so it starts at the root where these things shouldn't be happening. You know what I'm saying? There shouldn't be one role for one of us. And so because of that, we a lot of times getting this job is like the difference between me being able to pay my mortgage in New York City for the next year, or me having to move back home or move in with a friend and you know, sleep on somebody's couch because I can't afford to, you know, pay my bills because this is my livelihood. And so that is why then you kick into survival mode of, I need to win. I need to do this. I need to be the best. I need to, you know, instead of being like sitting back and be like, this is my journey. And then, but also people aren't afforded that luxury. And I understand that I'm afforded that luxury because I had the raising, the background that I have of being able and taught how to manage my money, how I have a supportive, you know, foundation and system where if I'm going hungry, I know I can call my godmother or my grandmother or my grandfather and be like, I'm hungry, I ate today. And then they'd be like, don't worry. And they'll send me some money. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I realized that luxury that I have that many people who don't have those people have or whatever. I don't know if I said that right, but I recognize that, and I'm very sensitive to that, which makes me, it holds me accountable for my own actions of how I treat people and I do things and I go about things, because I recognize like that is a thing.
Absolutely.
And so instead of me talking down on it, I'm like, well, what is the problem? What is the issue? How can I help? How can I be of assistance? How can I be of service?
Yeah. I love that though. I mean, it's a very, like, it's, you got to be generous and help out others too.
Yeah, I think it's if everybody had that mentality of helping and reaching, putting a hand out instead of a hand up.
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
So
that's your philosophy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If I can, if I can help myself, if I have it, even if I don't have it, sometimes I go without. I'm like, they actually need it more than I do. I'll make it back somehow. And that's a gift and a curse of mine. It is a gift and a curse of mine. I hate that I have it. I hate that I have it, you know, but I mean, I don't know where it came from. I've just always been giving. I've always been like, here, you can have it. And they're like, what about you? I'll be okay. And like, no, why you do that? You can't do that. You need to put the oxygen, you need to put the mask on yourself first. You need to breathe first.
Oh, yep, good analogy. Right.
But you don't kill yourself for trying to help somebody else. You got to help yourself first. And so I'm in my older age learning that, helping when I can.
Yeah.
You know, and if I have it extra, then I'll give it. But if I don't, then let me help you figure out another way to get it, but you can't have mine. I'm sorry.
You got to balance. Yeah, have a nice balance for that.
Absolutely.
Well, and two, you know, thinking about like you were saying of, oh, this next job could potentially be giving me like my mortgage payment or things like that. Like, you know, survival jobs are often like a big thing for actors in New York, and working outside of just like the artistic side of things. And so I have always been so curious to hear about your story at Broadway.com. Like, was that after Motown or was that when you first got to New York?
No, that was after Motown. So
got you.
That was in between. You know, I came here with dreams and a bucket list, right? And Motown fulfilled and checked off every dream and every bucket list thing that I wanted to do in life.
Yeah.
And so Broadway.com was my transition to figuring out what I actually wanted to do with my life and where I wanted to go. And you know, I just didn't like not working because at the time I didn't have an agent. I had a manager, but like the auditions weren't coming in like they were supposed to. And, you know, I saw my savings just like going down. I was like, nope, I need to find something to do. And so, you know, I applied to Broadway.com and, you know, just to kind of like being a responsible adult. And so I was like, Broadway.com is going to keep me in the industry, close enough to the industry where I don't have to leave it. So, it's, you know, Broadway adjacent, essentially.
Right.
I was like, I can still go to shows. I can still be a part of the you know, the group and the community, and I won't be as far away from it. And so it provided that, you know, that security that I needed financially for me to be an adult and not be like, hey, Papa, can you help me out on my rent this month? Or like, because I'm also prideful. So I didn't like making them phone calls, you know? And so that, you know, they helped me out. But one thing that I will say is that Broadway.com really encouraged me not to be there. They're like, you don't need to be here. You're in a Broadway show. You're a Broadway star. Like, you don't need to be here. We love you. We want you here, but you don't need to be here. And, you know, John Gore was the one that says, you know, hey, whatever we need to do to help you get back on Broadway, we are, you know, you have my full support. And so it's because of that and because of my bosses and supervisors at Broadway.com, they championed me and I would be going to auditions on my lunch break. I'd be switching lunches with somebody else to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, they really encouraged and helped me out. And, you know, my friends would come to work and my desk used to be bare. And the only thing I had on my desk was sticky notes because I had to remind myself. So I had sticky notes like, I will be on another Broadway show in 2021 or 17, 18, 18, 19, whatever the year was. And then like, I just made these sticky notes and, you know, that was the only thing that was on my desk. It was like, why you don't have any pictures and stuff like everybody else has? I said, because it's a reminder that I'm not going to be here for long. I'm not going to be here for long, you know? I said, so I'm not going to bring anything here to like set and decorate because I don't plan on being here long, for a long time. And, you know, probably a couple days shy of my 1 year anniversary there, I end up leaving because I had booked Ain't Too Proud. And so that was, you know, a motivation. And it was a time that helped me when I needed to be helped. You know, I have been in I was in a relationship prior to that that didn't quite work out the way I wanted to work out. And it was, you know, it had me, you know, questioning like, you know, what is it that you want to do? Like, you're not focused anymore because like you let this, you know, take you off track. So not get back on the trail, on the train tracks, so you can go back in the direction that you were heading because you were distracted. And so I did all that, and Broadway.com really, really helped me out.
Yeah, I was always curious to hear the story, and thank you for sharing because I've come across several actors in the industry who were like, you know, oh no, I worked in merchandising or I did X, Y, and Z. And I think it's just such an interesting perspective to have that you were like, I have stood on a Broadway stage and then I've also explored other parts of the Broadway ecosystem, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was also very interesting being on that side of the table to kind of see how the inner workings of Broadway shows work. Because I was working in the call center, so I was doing the subscriptions, I was doing the touring houses, I was doing, you know, all of these things. So it was kind of like, wow, like this is what is being done for us, you know, to put people in these seats. And I didn't understand. So it made me actually appreciate those people and have a different outlook on like, wow, like, they're really like working really hard to sell these tickets and to make sure these people have these subscriptions and make sure that they're changing, you know, seats. And if anything, any experience goes bad, we get the brunt of it and the actors will never know what's going on. So like, you know, it was just a really, really just educating experience. So now I know how to work both and I appreciate more the front of the house as well.
Which I love. So, because I wanted to talk about too, your audition for Ain't Too Proud, which you said you got while you were at Broadway.com. Mm-hmm. Like, did you strut in the audition room? You're like, I've been in Motown, I'm good. Or like, what was that audition process like?
No, I couldn't get an audition.
You couldn't get an audition?
No.
What?
You got to know prior to that. So prior to me working at Broadway.com, another, you know, they had already did the Berkeley run, was doing the Berkeley run of Ain't Too Proud before that. Mm. But before that, they had a workshop. And our mutual friend, Felicia Boswell, she was the original Diana in the like first workshop iteration of it. And so afterwards, she had called me immediately. It was like, Jay, she said, there is a show about the Temptations that they're trying to get to Broadway. And you supposed to be in this room. I don't understand why you're not in this room. And I'm like, what? Right. Really? Oh, okay. Like, but we had heard murmurs years before, even during Motown, that they were trying to bring it, a show about the Temptation there. And okay. So I didn't think anything of it. And so she was like, and I gave your number to the director. I said, I don't usually do this, but I'm going to give you. He's from Detroit. You from Detroit. Y'all need to talk. Now, unbeknownst to me, I didn't know who Dominique was at the time. Oh, but 2015, going back, after Motown closed, Motown went to LA to open. And I was out there for them for, you know, just, you know, socializing and just being like, oh, my show closed. Let me move to LA for a little bit. And one of our mutual friends had a birthday party and Dominique was there and her and I was talking and we played space together. And I didn't realize that Dominique is the same one Dominique that wrote this show.
That's amazing.
So
I love it.
Once I finally got the audition, you know, I walked in and then she saw me. I saw her. I'm like, yo, what's up? Like, oh my God, I know you, you know? And so it was a, it was one of those moments. And so like, but still I had to work for it, you know, because they didn't know me, especially the producers. And it was Derek Efferman, Jeremy, who kind of like was rallying for me. And, you know, the person who had it before, Jerry Joseph, who played it in Berkeley, once he found out he wasn't going forward, you know, with the project, he immediately called me and said, hey brother, I'm not going forward. Go out and get it. It's yours. I'm going to put, you know, I'm going to put a word in. And so they all, that's why I say this, going back, speaking the power of recommendation and speaking, knowing the power that people possess to help you, you know, because had they not spoke my name and said and put my name in the producer's ear and all these people's ears, I probably wouldn't have been in the room and they wouldn't have been on the lookout for me. So then when I got in the audition, you know, Dez Mackinoff, our director, he threw me for a loop. So the side breakdown was like, okay, prepare these sides and sing a Motown song from the Motown catalog. And so, of course, in true Dez's fashion, I walk in, and I think he did this on purpose. He was like, oh, I don't feel like hearing anything from Motown or the book. Ugh, sing something else that don't have nothing to do with Motown. I'm like, I know you laugh. So on the fly, I was like, what am I going to do? And so a little small voice said, go back to your roots. And so I said, okay. So I went, I got my first choir song was Tomorrow by the Winans.
Oh, and
so,
I love it.
Like, it's just like the full circle moment of it all. So, you know, I auditioned at my Winans Academy for Motown.
Yeah.
And then, so now I'm back singing a Winans song at another like thing to get in the show. So I sang Tomorrow and the producers, everybody just lit up in the room, was like, oh my God. And then Kenny Seymour kind of like bumped the pianist that was playing. He was like, okay, can you do this? And so he sang, he played Ball of Confusion and Cloud Nine. He was like, can you sing this? And I sang this. He was like, okay, what about this? Can you do the octave? And I did the octave. He was like, oh my God. Okay, can you do this? And so I did everything that Kenny was giving me, I did. I was like, yeah, that's easy. And so he was like, oh my God. Oh my God, I'm about to have so much fun. I'm about to have so much fun. So when we got in the rehearsal process, I had to literally rewrite all my parts, you know, because Jared, you know, he's a great artist. He's a great guy. I love Jared. I adore Jared. Jared was singing everything like baritone, like Barry tenor stuff. And so I went in and I was like, okay, what if I do this? And what if I, so I started rewriting my own stuff. So when it came time to even record the album and do everything, they had the reference to me. It was like, okay, Juwan, what did you do during this time? So I can write it in. Cause they didn't know, like I had to like do all the, you know, my own stuff. Cause the stuff that Kenny was like trying to do, I was like, but what if I do the, you know, this note instead of that note, you know, I think this is a compliment, you know, the four of these, them well on this. So it was just a really, it was an interesting journey to Ain't Too Proud. It was a very interesting journey.
But I like the collaboration aspect too of like, oh, let's try this and let's do that.
Yeah, because they gave me 6 weeks rehearsal prior before I even met up with the rest of the group. So I was in rehearsal 6 weeks before learning all these dance moves because we only had, by the time rehearsals actually started, 2 weeks before we were in Berkeley for the actual show. So I had all of these catch up to do because they had already done it from the run in Berkeley, you know?
Right.
So it was that. So I was learning all this music and I was learning all this choreography. And one of these days I'm going to post my rehearsal videos because it was, they're all trash. Ooh. I look back at them now and they're all trash. And I'm like, woo, how did you get booked for this? But God is good.
Amen. But like that, you know, I feel like I've talked to you about the, I love that Papa was a Rolling Stone, the ka-ka, that like choreo. So I can't wait to see the rehearsal footage because y'all looked so smooth, so good on that stage.
Yeah, it's fun. Once it got in my body, there was no stopping me. Once you get into my body, my body automatically interprets it and turns it into what it needs to be. Because I'm always going to swag it out. Like, I just need to learn it. Hey, once I learn it, oh, good luck to everybody.
Right. No stopping you then.
None.
Well, and Melvin's wife got to see you perform, correct?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yes.
What was that experience like?
Emotional and a nervous wreck. And I'm glad I didn't know she was there until after the show was over.
Oh.
So I found out she was in the audience. At the end, it was like, Melvin Franklin's wife wants to meet you. And I should have bricked. I don't know if I can touch on that. Sorry. But you can blink it out. But I was in my dressing room and everybody came running to my dressing room. I was still like naked. I was like, y'all, I don't know. Right. I don't know if I'm ready for this. This is, And I put my big boy, pants on and I walked in that room. And she saw me and I saw her and she instantaneously ran up to me and hugged me and held on tight. And I just started crying. I'm a big old baby. I just started crying.
No, of course. Yeah.
And it was just the best exchange ever. She was just like, I just felt like you've known him all your life. Like you just got him down packed. I don't understand how somebody who has never met my husband has never got his mannerisms, got his heart, got his spirit, got embodied him.
Wow.
And she just cried and we cried and she's just been ever since been the biggest supporter, her and Devette, which is Melvin's daughter. I love them immensely. They're both so great.
It gives me chills. Like that sounds like such a like spiritually transcendent, like cosmic experience. That's so powerful.
Yeah, it's just, it's the love has been great. It's been really, really great.
I'm so glad because it's such a special show. And it's like, yes, it's the jukebox musical. It's about the Temps, but it's like, it has such an important message too, and I think it came at such a powerful time of like talking about how artists can unite people, how they can make change.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's also so fun. And like when I brought my mom, she was dancing. We were singing. Like it's just such a complete package of a show. I just love it.
Yeah, it's a show that I know years from now it's going to go down in history. Especially when we come back to Broadway because it's so relevant now, and it's just so it's so just what you need. It's just what you need. And I'm excited for it. And I'm so grateful for Dominique Morceau for writing such a great book and being real about it,
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I could gush about that show forever. And I know I could talk to you for literally hours. Cause as you said, I feel like you have like at least 10 other lives we didn't get to explore during this time.
I know. Maybe a next one. Maybe this is part one.
Part one. Yes, absolutely. But I'm, as always, such a fan of yours. And you had your Christmas single come out last year. And I'm just so excited to see what else you do next. But for today, we will wrap up with the final two questions of the podcast. The first one being, if you could recommend a piece of Black art, whether that be a book, a musical album, a play, a TV show, anything for our listeners to take in, what would that be?
Ooh. A piece of Black art. Okay, only because I've been listening to this album. He's become one of my new favorite artists because, trying to find... become an independent artist and like an artist myself. I've been looking for and exploring different sounds. Gregory Porter's album, All Rise, is a piece of art. It is phenomenal. You need to go check it out. You won't be disappointed. It's just a smooth, just a smooth sound to your listening ears. Like your ears will be exceptionally happy.
I haven't listened to that, so I will put that on my personal list as well. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then kind of in the same vein, if you could give a shout out to a fellow Black artist, who would that be? And everyone's always like, just one. And I'm like, I know, but it's just to give some love.
You can't so if you do that.
To, I know. If you just want to list some names too, is what some people do. They're like, I can't
just one. Oh man. Okay. Okay. Only because I can give you one only because he's in the forefront of my mind. And because I've been literally studying him for the last couple of weeks, Sterling K. Brown.
Yes. Listen, yes.
Sterling K. Brown. I've been watching him on This Is Us because I've been catching up because at one point, This Is Us became too emotionally draining for me. I was crying. I was mad. I was happy. I was, right. I was like, okay, it's overload. So I had to stop, but I've been back into it. And just watching him on screen, he is a masterclass. His acting, his subtlety, his just authenticity is real. It's everything is what you want. And I'm just in awe of him, you know, right now at this moment. It's, you know, I was just like, wow, I had no idea. Like, I've seen him, but I never actually paid attention. And, you know, in this, it's kind of hard being in the entertainment to kind of like turn off your criticism eye or like, you know, your eye. And so because of that, I'm actually glad I kept it on for him because like, I'm now a student. I'm writing everything down. Like, okay, he did this in this moment. Okay, well, why didn't he cry? Okay, let me go back and rewind. Oh, this moment, it's just, you know, I'm there. So I've been watching the episodes twice over. The first time to study and the second time just to enjoy it. So it's taking me a little bit longer now, but Sterling K. Brown is my pick.
Yes, a beautiful shout out. I support that wholeheartedly because the man is, he's other level. He really is. Yeah. And if people want to continue to follow your journey, where can they follow you on social media?
My main account is Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram at Jawan Jackson, at Jawan Jackson, or Twitter. I'm Jawan M. Jackson on Twitter.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Jawan, for being here. Again, always rooting you on, always cheering you on. So excited to so you continue to shine and all of the other exciting projects that I'm sure we will be hearing about from you soon.
Yes, I'm excited too. And thank you so much for taking the time to interview me.
Of course. Until next time, y'all.
Peace.